When you secure your playoff spot by losing to Minnesota, it's That So MLS with myself, Nick Thornton. With me, as always, is Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you?
Nick, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. We should, of course, mention that this is a weekly North American soccer podcast available on iTunes and wherever fine podcasts could be procured. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes.
Do those things.
The matchups this week are made to test arguments like, is this team going to make the playoffs? What could happen if this team, these two teams make the playoffs and face each other? And I feel like not a lot of, I feel like some very emphatic answers were given.
Yeah, I think a few things, I agree. I definitely think some questions were answered, at least insofar as we can tell. But also, of course, it's MLS, so there's still a few, like, okay. I would say only one or two real sort of shocks. The rest probably played out much as we would expect, but I agree that the way that things shaped up, we're beginning to get a pretty good look of what playoff matchups might look like, and certainly how, which teams might be going into the playoffs.
Absolutely. Do we want to talk about the Vancouver one first? Because I guess that happened.
Let's start with the Canadian team that won a game this week.
Let's
ease into it, Andrew. You know, it's been a rough few weeks for Whitecaps fans. Let's give some love to the TFC fans.
Yeah.
Toronto FC, you magnificent bastards. You won a game. We should also mention, I don't think New England has won a game since July. Ouch. So there's that. Possibly not a huge surprise.
How are they still in the position they are, if that's the case?
I think they've been, the thing is that they've been drawing a lot of games. And, you know, if you're not winning, it's great to be not losing. Yeah, they have 11 draws, and they haven't been giving up a ton of goals. So I think that's how they've been hanging on. I think that it also helps that I think they had some good early results.
Yeah.
And then when they skidded out, they were getting draws, but they weren't getting scored against a ton. They just weren't scoring themselves.
Right.
Obviously, this is a great result for Toronto. The interesting thing in this game for me is that it's actually New England who goes up first. And we start to see all the problems that we've had with this makeshift Toronto backline. And I imagine for some TFC supporters, they're probably just thinking like, all right, here we go. Are we about to lose to New England? And then Toronto just finds the holes in New England and really turns things around. What's your read on this match?
Well, it's so funny. It was the unfortunate match for Jonathan Osorio, who has a lot, including I believe a goal he scores at first that, like, there's no possible way because he is responsible for a foul moments before. But I think that, especially that, I think the Giovinco goal is the first Toronto goal. I'm waiting for my notes to load. Or the second.
Yeah. It's the first.
That's the one where it's like, oh, Toronto is here. The Toronto that we know is here. Hello.
Yeah. The fact, it's the Giovinco of old. And, you know, when he shows up, he's running at speed and yet takes the ball like a free kick and just hits it from an impossible angle, being closed down, and it hits it with a curve while he's running.
Yeah.
And then things just kind of go from there.
With the great New England pass from Vasquez, too, is a key part of that.
Yeah, I thought Vasquez had a tremendous match, and you begin to see that when those players are working well together, how much of a threat they can be. And knowing that New England has had such trouble scoring goals, I'm not surprised at the final scoreline.
Yeah.
That although this seems like a blowout, I actually feel like it's not.
Yeah.
Just because New England really has had issues, and I think a lot of other teams probably could have and should score more here.
That penalty is rough, too.
What's that?
That penalty is rough, too. I mean, it's not wrong, it's just rough.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's the Toronto third goal.
Which Vasquez tucks away nicely for them.
I noticed that they have Vasquez taking those instead of Giovinco, probably for the best. for all parties concerned.
Yeah, I think we've established Giovinco can I like Giovinco. Giovinco can take the free kicks. Vasquez can take the penalties. I think that's, like you said, works out for everyone.
What popped out, what popped out for me when I was watching the highlight package is the note at the end that this was the first TFC's first win of the season when conceding first, which I mean, like, is just a boggling statistic for me. Which, I mean, like, you know, that kind of fight back, I guess that explains kind of some of the issues that they've had, but wow, that does not meet with what you would have thought of at the beginning of the season from Toronto.
No, indeed it does not. And I think, like, I could probably safely say by now at this point that, my goodness, don't put all your eggs in the Champions League basket. because now we're in a situation where, like, everyone was saying, oh, it won't matter, you know, Toronto can make up the ground, but then they dealt with the injury thing and dealt with the Michael Bradley thing as a center back. But now they're in the position where they've got so much ground to make up that it is really hard to catch up to teams. And although it's a great win for them, they're still 2 points behind New England. And I believe there's only three games left for both teams, or thereabouts. Possibly four. So if they're going to make up the ground, they need to do it in short order.
Yeah.
Also of note, we saw Jozy Altidore for a little bit, and that little bit being 18 minutes before he had to get subbed off because of injury. So I think we're kind of in a situation where never count Jozy out, but if they do somehow squeak into the playoffs, will they make it far without Mr. Altidore's service?
It's weird because in the last 3 years, Jovinco's been the biggest star, but Altidore has unquestionably been the one that gets the results when it counts.
Yeah.
Been the most clutch.
Agreed.
You're right about four games.
Right. Which, you know, it's certainly not impossible from what we were saying before of their chances. Yes, there is a possibility, but looking at some other results in the week that we'll get to, I still think they just left it too late and have learned their lesson for next year.
Yeah, I guess this is I mean, like, other than the weird thing is that other than Janssen or Hansen. Other than Hansen emerging as a scoring force, it's like I feel like from the very beginning of the season to now, they haven't changed much. They just had this weird dip. Like all the work in evolution that's gone on over the season has been to get them back to where they started. Which, I mean, that's what you need to do to build things up for next season, but still.
Yep. No, I agree. This is a team that really hasn't added much or changed much, and I think it's showing. I think what we've seen also is not just the injuries, but that teams figured them out. MLS is brutal because you have to be constantly evolving or do the thing you do very, very, very well. And Toronto only has one season of practice at doing something very, very well. And of course, that thing is scoring goals and just overpowering opponents that just sort of get intimidated by the sheer attacking force of this team. But when that dipped, we saw Toronto doesn't really have a lot of tricks up its sleeve or cards in its back pocket that it can play.
No.
But a good win for them nonetheless. They're keeping themselves in the picture. So I guess the optimist in me, and for the TFC fans, they'll be happy to see them getting results. But boy, do they have a big, big task. And I don't think it's going to happen for them.
They could definitely pass. They could definitely pass New England because, you know, New England is not great in form right now. Who they're going to have trouble passing?
Who's that?
Is DC United, who had this match. DC sits seventh. Montreal sits sixth. In heading into this match, DC were behind Montreal on 5 points, and they scored that many goals. Five goals. This was, I watched the extended highlights on YouTube, the 20-minute package for the first time. And, of course, they just happened to pick the game that's an absolute blowout. Mm-hmm. That would have been all goals if they had just been to the four-minute format. This was, I mean, like, you saw what has made Montreal a success so far out of this. Like, mm-hmm. You saw a lot of fight. You saw a lot of, you know, effort on defense. But that first, I think I had it that the first goal pops loose. The first goal pops loose while Safir Taider is doing like back check defense. So you can tell everybody's working so hard, but the ability to have people be dogged and stay on the play doesn't really beat organization. And the coughing it up, the very key assist from Assad really helps DC get things off to a good start.
I agree. Montreal looked just utterly out of sorts and really without a game plan. And we've seen them play this way before, as they have difficulty keeping their shape, especially out of possession, and they're just getting pulled all over the place. Now, I think that they've still been able to get some results, especially recently, while playing like this, because they're hard to mark at times because they're not as organized. However, when you're playing against this reinvigorated, reinvented DC United that just moves with so much speed, and you've got three or four players that can just place a ball on a plate wherever they want it, you get undone pretty quickly. And I thought this was really clear on the Areola goals, where there just seemed to be no one really sure of quite where to go or who to mark. And not in the way that we've been traditionally talking about through most of this podcast. There just seems to always be someone open that just is able to pull off from the defender. And Montreal's trying to do this thing where they've got a ball coming in, being played in from the wing, and they sort of have three guys in the box tracking it, trying to hold a line, but they're not actually tracking the players. They're like, all of a sudden they've decided to keep this weird shape.
Yeah.
And do zonal marking. But when you've got a ball flying in like that, and you've got the speed of players like Areola and Acosta, you need to mark the player. And we know that these players are people that can also beat that offside trap really easily.
Their ability to break back, I think that you definitely see that they're spending a lot of time turning. You know, it's mm-hmm. very hard. It's very hard for them once the break starts for them to get back in time. Which creates this, like, I have written in my notes, Rooney to Acosta to Areola on the third goal, too easy.
Yeah. Well, and even the final goal, the fifth from DC and the second for Rooney, is, you know, it's Evan Bush is having to come flying out to win the ball because his defenders are caught sleeping. And this is also like the fifth or sixth time this play is being made, where somebody's making a run in behind the defense.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's no one there, and the center backs are so far apart. And then it just falls to Rooney, who hits it on a beautiful volley from out far and chips it over Evan Bush. But for a player of his quality, that's actually a pretty easy goal. And it looks fantastic, but it's made easy because even when it comes to Rooney, nobody's putting pressure on him. So, I mean, I get it. You're down 4-0. I can't really... I've been in situations like that, too. I mean, you're going to put your body on the line at that point at the 81st minute to stop a fifth goal from going in. But worrying for Montreal.
Yeah, absolutely. I have written down on that last one, if you got to critique goal five, they've left... You know, you can't really blame it on Evan Bush, who's been left with so much to deal with.
Yeah, what choice does he have but to come out?
Yeah, it's rough for Montreal. Although, you know, in a 5-0 game, you look a lot at the five. I think that DC have a lot to thank Bill Hamid for, because Montreal didn't have the most that they've ever had. Of course, they didn't have a extensive offensive repertoire in this game, but there were a lot of nice chances from Quincy Amerequois. If some of those go in at the 1-0 level, at the 2-0 level, we could be looking at a different game. So I do think that his contribution was also huge in securing this result.
Absolutely. And, when we talk about a reinvigorated DC, Bill Hamid has been part of that. And I think will continue to be. But that's exactly what teams need right now at this point in the season, is to have players stepping up in all areas. It's great if you can all of a sudden score goals, but DC has bled a lot of goals this season. The fact that they've been able to tighten that up so quickly says great things for them. Now, the interesting thing here with Montreal is that we could say, first of all, they're still 2 points ahead of DC, so technically they're still in the driver's seat for that sixth and final playoff spot in the East. It's unlikely they're going to leapfrog Philadelphia in 3 games, and Philadelphia is going to lose 3 games to tie them in points. However, Montreal has, I would argue, a pretty cushy schedule moving forward.
Yes.
They're playing, this Saturday they'll be playing Columbus. Columbus has been okay, but has had trouble scoring goals. So if Montreal can reignite the attack, that could bode well for them. Then they play Toronto, and Montreal is playing at home. That'll be a feisty match, but I still think it's one that Montreal can win.
Yeah.
And then their final away game is against New England, which, unless they have some sort of hand-to-God moment that makes them come alive, you have to imagine that there's at least they could get another 6-7 points out of their season. So even if DC wins all of the next 3, they may not be able to catch up. Although DC might have games in hand. So is where everybody gets their slide rules out. And
oh, DC's got 2 games in hand on Montreal.
Right.
Bad news.
I'm just pulling up their schedule here to see what's next for them.
I think that, it's hard looking at it to think that Montreal can make up the ground on either of those 2 teams above them. But, I mean, we'll talk about it in a bit. They did Montreal a big favor, kind of.
Right. So just quickly looking at DC's schedule coming up, they have 4 home games in a row.
Oh, wow.
When I think this is the thing that people have been talking about all season long, is they spent so much time on the road early on in the season, but now they're getting the reward back and having all these home games. So they've got Chicago this weekend. You've got to think that's 3 points for them.
Yes.
Then they play Dallas, who's struggled, so could be another 3 points there. Then they play Toronto. Who knows? That'll be a good one to think about in terms of how the playoffs shape up.
Yep.
Then they play New York City, which we'll get to. Anything could happen there. And then they play Chicago again away. So I would say DC has also a pretty easy schedule, but a lot can happen in those games.
That's correct.
With 5 games, I would say Montreal needs at least another win, because DC is likely to get at least 2 more. So I don't know. We'll see.
I was going to say, if you accept in your heart that Toronto FC is basically out, because we're talking about Montreal being basically out, and they're a spot ahead of DC. So if you accept in your heart that TFC is out, it's wild to me that they could not only disrupt any potential chances of Vancouver making it in, but they could also disrupt Montreal's playoff push, both by potentially beating them and also by losing to DC, theoretically. Or the other way around. They could also, if those 2 results go in the other direction, they could usher Montreal into the playoffs. But I love how tied in, if you don't think that it's going to happen, and It's going to be a real push to get anywhere near it. They have this weird psychic link to both Vancouver and Montreal.
There is this weird push and pull thing that happens with the Canadian teams where they seem to psychologically affect each other somehow.
Yes.
For better or for worse.
The thing that I thought was funny to look at was this quote the Athletic had when asked, like, you know, are you, do you, the value of coming into the playoffs with the right form at the right time, and he says, I'd worry maybe a bit more if we were in this situation with the group we had 4 months ago. What's he talking about, I wonder? Kevin Ellis? Kevin Ellis has done a lot. He came in the last 4 months. Bill Hamid?
Yeah.
Bill Hamid's done great. But as much as I make fun, I think that if they do make the playoffs, the reason for it and what's created such a buzz around it is that it hasn't been down to the transfer of just one or two people. It has been the ability to create a group around the roster since that move.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, agreed. Like, Ben Olsen, you could have called Ben Olsen getting fired last year. I guess not. He now presides over one of the hottest teams in the league somehow.
Yeah. Elsewhere in Canada, well, I guess technically Carson, California.
Yeah.
So we talked last week about Rabo getting fired and blowing it up, and blow it up they did.
Well,
I was not surprised by this. I was surprised that it happened so emphatically. But this, to me, was as whitecaps of a loss as we've seen this season. In yet another game where I think overall we played as well as we could of with the players on the pitch. Go down 3-0, give up 2 PKs to old Zlatan, to give up a penalty in the 4th minute. To me, it just summed up the entire season and the lack of quality we have on the pitch. And you know, Marcel de Jong, I think, has been good for us overall and really influential at points, but there's been no consistency there. We really lack quality on that left-back position, and to just leave his foot hanging out and dragging it, you know, a player like Zlatan's always going to make a meal of that. And I think it's a fair penalty as well.
I have how does de Jong give up a tired penalty at minute 2 in my notes?
Yeah, exactly. It is just lazy defending, and they didn't look mentally sharp. I don't know what much else to say out of this one. Do you want to talk more specific? Do you have any notes about this match?
I have a few. You talk about De Jong. The other thing, it's weird to say because I think that Danilo Henry has performed above expectations, but I don't think that he has. I still don't think that he's up to standard. You know, like I thought he was gonna. I've heard, you know, the some of the talk about when he came out of Ottawa was really bad, and he hasn't been truly bad, but he's just been in a lot of the ends of these defensive errors. Late on, and he's responsible for the second penalty. He's also kind of, if you think about it, responsible for the first penalty because De Jong is the one that sort of hacks when he's not in a position to actually touch the ball. But part of that is because he's having to cut back into space where Henry should be challenging.
Yeah, and that's where I go. Like, it might sound like just a despondent Whitecaps fan, and maybe it is, but I honestly feel like the Whitecaps this season have been as good as they can be with the players that they have.
Yes.
And it's been disappointing because we have some great players on the squad. But when you look at the quality of other teams and the consistency and where they're spending money, you know, the teams that perform at the top levels in the league do spend a lot of money on their defense. Mm-hmm. And set them up with a really solid system. And we've decided to go cheap in the back. That came out wrong, but that's what we've gotten, right? So I don't think that we've been terrible. But against a team like LA that we know has such great attacking ability, I don't think we can be too surprised by this result.
I've got O. Henry in my notes after that penalty. yeah, we can't be too surprised. I think that the positives, well, I mean, there's one positive play for the Whitecaps, and it's one Davies to Kamara chance, which is I saw a video about Davies getting his face and feature scanned for FIFA 19. And the one play they choose to show is a Davies to, I think it's like a Kamara to Davies or a Davies to Kamara play. No, it's Davies scoring and then immediately celebrating with Kamara. They've done their homework down there at Electronic Arts. But the story here is all in Ibrahimovic, who scores that penalty, misses a free kick, hits this amazing shot from the top of the box on a play where basically it was all the Galaxy players passing back and forth with him. He's you know, bouncing off them, but creating the whole play for himself. And then when he has the chance to score a hat trick, I hate calling a player on two goals on a hat trick because it makes me think they've scored a hat trick. They're on a hat trick when they've scored a hat trick in my eyes. But, like, he gives up the chance to score that vaunted third goal and just sort of waves a penalty on to Romain Alessandrini. So that was a very selfless display.
Yeah, I think the two have developed good chemistry. Alessandrini struggled a little bit, and I think Zlatan knows, and who's probably told as well, like, they need Alessandrini operating in form if they're going to make a late playoff push. Well, what was I going to say? Oh, sorry, I got distracted because I brought up LA's schedule. The next three games they have is away to Sporting Kansas City. I would say toss a coin there. We'll get to them in a second. Away to Minnesota. Who knows? And then home to Houston, which I think we can safely say is probably another 3 points for them. However, the way Houston's been playing recently, you never know.
Yeah, I can't wait to get to them. yeah, you know, they put themselves in a good position, and you know, Vancouver's kind of the same way, where, you know, we talked about it, they obviously made this coaching move at the time they did because they didn't think that it would be possible to get through, and this only exacerbates that issue.
Question to you then. Do you think it's possible?
For the Whitecaps?
Yeah.
Only, you know, I don't see it. Not if they had to win this one for it to be the case, because there is a chance that RSL, you know, could fall out of sorts. And you could catch RSL, but if you give up this result, you can't catch RSL and the Galaxy.
Yeah, I agree. And especially the way that RSL has been playing, again, even if they're not winning, they haven't been losing, at least as much.
True.
And you have to think that LA has at least another 3 points in the end of their season. Maybe that's all they get. But this, to me, was just a real sign that the Whitecaps don't have what it takes. I'd love to be proven wrong, but truly looking at their final schedule, I actually don't think Vancouver will win another game this season.
I hate to hear that. I hate to think about that, but
I know. And again, it probably sounds a little despondent, but part of the reason why is, okay, we're going away to Toronto with a huge chip on our shoulder. I think that's going to affect us mentally. And I think Toronto, clearly they've got our number and know how to beat us.
Yes.
And I see no reason why they wouldn't be able to do it again.
Yes.
So fine. Okay. We're not going to win all three. So that's one. Then we're playing Sporting Kansas City at home. Now they've been a little touch and go. Again, we have another chip on our shoulder because they've also beat the hell out of us this season. The trouble for that match is Davies, Henry, and Tybert will all be out of action playing for the national team.
Oh, for what game?
For the for against SKC. Davies, Henry, and
Oh,
Tybert have all been called up for CONCACAF qualifying matches.
I can't believe that's for a home game too.
And so, okay, I agree. I don't think losing Henry is necessarily the biggest deal in the world. Losing Davies is a massive blow because he's been the only bright spot in the last few games of a player, I would say, amongst two others, which is Kai Kamara and Russell Tybert. And I think Russell Tybert has been a steady, calm presence in midfield that's kept the engine running and kept play moving and also been a little bit more attacking when we've needed to be. I think he's been more of the vocal organizing player on the pitch that we've been missing. So even though we may have Reyna back, I really think that game against SKC is going to be difficult. And then we play LAFC. So LAFC's been up and down. Maybe we beat them, but it's really hard to be optimistic. Even just looking at it from a totally objective view, all three of those teams have beat us and are better than us currently. So I don't see a way in which we get any points out of these, or certainly any wins,
I want to believe
which is not going to
though.
be enough.
Maybe LAFC. LAFC
Maybe
seem to be.
LAFC, but that means that we still, even if we win that one, we still are a point behind LA Galaxy if they lose all their easy games that they have coming up.
That's true. Yeah, no,
So
the choice has been made, right? Like the belief, no matter what you say, the focus is elsewhere. It's on finding this new coach. It's on, next year.
And playing for positions at this point. I mean, they may have not had a crash out season like San Jose or Colorado, but you have to imagine there's going to be a massive, massive overhaul of the Whitecaps lineup. And I think most players will know that and know that if they'd like to stay with this club, that they need to perform. But individual performances don't win games, and this is why we're where we are.
Davies was like the one that had anything going whereas Kamara.
Which means that the final game that they play will be, Davies won't play at home again until the last game. So that will be the last game will be truly his last game because he won't be playing against SKC at home.
The Sporting Kansas City played the other team in this situation, RSL. And you mentioned that the RSL is not losing, but they tied this game 1-1. And after scoring the first goal, you really got to think that this was an opportunity lost for them. They could have been the hero. They should have been the heroes.
I think Mike Petke will be pretty disappointed that they sort of shot themselves in the foot here. That being said, the goal that Sporting Kansas City gets is I think it's from a corner, at least it's from a ball out wide
It's a
to Aiko
corner. It's a
Parra
corner to
over Nick Raimondo. And I'm like, okay, first of all, Aiko
Aikopara.
Parra is 9,000 feet tall. Nick Raimondo is 3 feet shorter than him. Like even the commentator, they're like, "Well, there's no way Nick Raimondo's getting to that." And they're like, "Yes, there's literally no physical way that that could have been a save. Whoever was supposed to be marking Aiko Parra should have done a better job." But one mistake, I see this as a major positive for RSL,
Well, they hit the
because
crossbar. They hit the crossbar too. Raimondo took a knee to the head and managed to stay in it and cover up a managed to avert a certain death goal. That was a rebound. They did so much and got so close. I just feel like this is. I guess you're right. They rescued the point, but.
And again, I think against a good team in kind of a tense situation, Sporting KC has been up and down, as we've mentioned. They've had some pretty poor results recently, but they are in the table because they've played extremely well over the season. The fact that they've given up so many results, if you can call it that, and they're still sitting pretty comfortably in second place says a lot. So this one was a tough match, and I think getting a point out of it is positive, knowing that they have a little bit of daylight between them and LA Galaxy. And certainly, this is the other thing, is even if Vancouver eclipses LA, Real Salt Lake is in a pretty good position themselves. And looking at their schedule, their next home game is against Portland, who hasn't scored a goal since 1987. A little harsh on them, a little harsh. Then they play New England at home, and then they play Portland away. So you got to think there's 6 points in there for them somewhere. It will be up to them to not throw it away like they have done at various points. But I really think that this sixth final playoff spot in the West is is deserved by Real Salt Lake, and I think they'll earn it.
Fingers crossed. I mean, for LA, as interesting as they have been and as well as they've managed to reform themselves around Zlatan, that character building first playoff miss wouldn't be bad for him.
Absolutely. Well, and he might have to, there might be turf games coming up, so he may not even show up to those ones.
As a contender,
there will be, because they're playing Minnesota away. I bet you anything he doesn't play in Minnesota.
As a contendership game, what did you think of the Columbus Crew Philadelphia Union blank 0-0 draw? Were you disappointed for either of them, or do you think this is just sort of a stalemate as a potential playoff confrontation? If they're both in their same position, maybe not, because they would end up on different ends of the wild card, but. Definitely in the same zone.
Yeah, they were a point apart before the game, and they were a point apart after the game. Sitting at fourth and fifth place.
Oh, I guess that would have them. This would be the first round playoff matchup then.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's a little bit of them wanting to hold on to where they're at. Philadelphia, after losing the Open Cup, I think wanted to just get something out of a game. For me, most of the game looked like it was all Columbus. They really did have most of the chances going forward, and good old Andre Blake doing his job, earning his paycheck, kept them off the sheet. Columbus just looked a little bit out of sorts. Justin Merrim is still adjusting and had a couple of chances, but took them rather than seeing the players he could have passed to. I feel like Columbus probably could have won this one. However, I think just not losing is also good for them.
Yeah.
Knowing that both are Philadelphia 7 points clear of Montreal, Columbus is 8 points clear. I think they'll both be fine with a point. It'll really be up to the next few games. I would imagine in a playoff situation, it would also be pretty tight. And these teams play very similarly and set their teams up very similarly. But I think we'd expect to see a little bit more competitiveness between them. I think it was just, some teams at this point in the season, everybody's tired. It's easy to lose focus. And ultimately you're going, all right, we're fine with a point.
You're absolutely right. Columbus could not be, I had written in my notes that Columbus could not be luckier to have an own goal disallowed when they tripped on their dicks two times. having a defender sort of like fall backwards as things are going, and then
Abubakar did get shoved in the throat to the pitch, so I feel like
maybe I missed that.
He did fall backwards, but it was a pretty straight armed challenge into the neck throat area.
my apologies then for the
Abubakar doesn't go down that easy.
I thought it was a slip, but the fact that it was an own goal, and then the other note that I have, you're absolutely right that the Blake save really kept saved the point for Philadelphia. Zardes gets this jaunty chip on the roof of the net, and then Merrim hits the side. Guys, you cannot score points for hitting the other sides of the goal.
It's gotta go in the front.
Gotta go in the front. There's no points for that.
Don't cheap out at the back, and you gotta go in the front. That's friendly advice from us to you all.
the 6-0-0 tie. What do you think of that?
For who? What?
So it was for Columbus, it was their 6-0-0 tie this season.
Oh, I see. Sorry. I'm back. I was thinking about something else. I think it's for the kind of season that they've had and the kinds of stuff that's going on behind the scenes, I think it's fine, you know? They also have a great defensive record. They've conceded as few goals as Atlanta. They haven't always scored a ton, but they're in fourth place. I think that's evidence of how, in MLS, again, if you're not winning games, just don't be losing them. And I think sometimes it says a lot more about a team that can hold on to a 0-0 draw against teams in form than it does if you're able to, you know, maybe squeak past and just get the luck, or, you know, maybe win 3-2. Clean sheets in MLS are so rare anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That is six clean sheets. That's a great point.
That's how I see those 0-0 draws. It's maybe not the most entertaining thing in the world, but hey, six clean sheets has got to be at least tied for best in the league. I don't know the exact stats on that, but they've got a great goalkeeper as well. They've done their defensive work when they've needed to. So, yeah, I think it's fine.
We had this weird week for Chicago, where they start on Wednesday with this 2-0 loss to Chicago that confirms that New York City is in the playoffs. The Chicago backup goalkeeper Cleveland, Johnny Cleveland or whatever his name is, really lucked out throughout the whole first half, and then eventually, spoilers, it doesn't last. Chicago didn't get anything going on, and then a backheel pass to Ring finds him wide open. And I think Alexander Ring scores to get the first one. I have written, what? Chicago number 22 just lets David Villa wander off onto the ball for the second goal.
Isn't it just gobsmacking sometimes to watch defenders against these top-rate strikers? And it's not even like the striker makes them look like a fool. Because, you know, you could be forgiven for getting nutmegged or just getting straight-up turned. You could be forgiven for that.
Yes.
But to just stand back and sort of watch and fail to close down is just, for me, like, in Vancouver, we saw Alphonso Davies come steaming back at one point and just straight-up robs Zlatan and dumps him. And I'm like, see, that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Why is everybody standing around looking at Zlatan waiting for him to dance through you? Like, go in and make a challenge. And you might fail, but at least try. But yeah, to just stand there and be like, David, where do you want to go today? Do you want to cut through here and have a shot? Do you want to go around and have a shot? I'll just wait here for you.
So, absolutely. New York, they looked great in the midweek. It was a really unfortunate game for Chicago. And then somehow on the weekend, Chicago hosts LAFC at home and beats them 3-1.
Yes, and I believe at this point they also knew that they were eliminated.
Yeah, and the funny thing about them Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. The funny thing is that they're in 10th and they're eliminated. But Orlando City is 6 points behind them and somehow still mathematically eligible because they have two games in hand. So Orlando sits last in the conference, and then Chicago is somehow eliminated. They're not.
Well, that's why. I thought MLS Soccer just made a mistake there, but...
No, it's real.
I guess mathematically, Orlando could somehow conceivably... I mean, they can't, though, really, can they?
No. There's no way they're making up six playoff places. I mean, like, if something magically happens, but I feel like the
if it does, I'm flying to Orlando. I'm buying the jersey, and I will forever be a lifelong supporter because that would be insane to somehow leapfrog. But I think it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I feel like a big part of that is just they didn't play this week. This was, I guess, their bye. So great result for Chicago, especially at home. You know, it's very disappointing to miss the playoffs. So to miss the playoffs away and then have a very strong, strong result with goals from Katai and a penalty goal from Nikolic is awesome. Mm-hmm. LAFC somehow has like invincibility. They've got the, like somehow they got the powers of the Super Mario invincibility star in two parts. Like, they were able to, they got all the offensive powers in the first half of the season, and now they have all the defensive powers in this part of the season. Because it's like, it feels like they just, like, are relaxing poolside, which is not a great way to go into the playoffs, get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. If you somehow had the LA, if you somehow had the MLS marketer's dream of an LAFC, LA Galaxy first round playoff game, first of all, there's going to be like a billion goals scored, yeah. But there's not a. I would not rate LAFC in that. In that.
No, God, it's so crazy to think of how bad they've been, or just up and down they've been, and same with Portland. To be sitting third and fourth, it's just like, come on, who's taking? Someone surpassed them already. This is. I'm tired of watching LAFC stay third without winning any freaking games.
And then the other half of that midweek fixture, New York City, somehow goes and loses away to Minnesota.
They don't somehow do it. Minnesota does it to them.
That's absolutely
sir.
True. That's absolutely true. I'm not gonna take this. I'm not gonna take this win out of Minnesota's hand for one second. It is, I believe, Rodriguez with two goals.
You are correct.
Yes, with this just impossible ball from Ibarra that was so wonderful. I have written down in my notes, is the Minnesota supporter section called the Wonderwall?
Yes.
Anyways, here's Wonderwall. That's what I had written down there as Minnesota scores to get the first goal. I just have haha what written in my notes as Rodriguez picks off a wacky back pass. Yeah. Somehow they're able to concede a red card and still hold on because New York City doesn't score until the 91st minute. But Minnesota for some again, we've talked about anybody being able to beat anybody, but the ninth ranked team. Taking points off the third ranked team, or the ninth in the West versus third in the East, and somehow the East can't even pick up that one. I haven't run the numbers on East versus West this year, but wow,
it's something. And the crazy thing about this game too is, at first, if you just saw the scoreline, you'd think like, okay, Minnesota got lucky, maybe they got a penalty, and I don't know, all of New York had a cold. But this really was all Minnesota for most of the game. They looked completely in control and played incredibly well. And just really highlighted that New York City is also a team that can run out of ideas. And somehow they just sort of need luck on their side to make things happen. But it was two great goals from Rodriguez. And as we've seen so many times in New York City, I think it's on the second goal, from Ibarra's cross, right? No,
That's the first goal.
Sorry, the first one. Yeah, the cross that comes in. Rodriguez is just out there standing all by himself, and the defender even turns around and looks at him at one point and doesn't bother to get near. And you're just like, well, look, guys, if there's no question New York City FC is going to make the playoffs, but I think we're going to see what's happened to them in the past in the playoffs is they're just going to get pulverized early on because their marking and their defensive work sometimes is just so non-existent. It's really baffling.
In no uncertain terms, they do not look unbeatable.
No. And when they're playing well, of course, they look like the best in MLS. But man, when they switch off hard.
Their neighbors in the table. This is like, I feel like for everything else that happened, this almost went under remarked. We had the MLS number one and number two, overall play each other. And although it's a very interesting matchup to think of when it comes to any potential Eastern Conference final, New York Red Bulls beating Atlanta 2-0 at home. I feel was a really real referee festival. In as much yeah. as as much as none of the calls I thought were super, super wrong, it's just it's hard to take from that what any clear result.
I see what you're saying, and I kind of agree, but I think this just showed where, again, when we talk about any of the top teams are still beatable, this is where the Red Bulls showed that they can beat the best teams. Atlanta really looked to be struggling to come up with ideas. You know, we barely heard about all the names we're so familiar hearing ad nauseum about from Atlanta.
Yep.
And, you know, to give up two penalties, I think the first one was a good no call.
Yep.
The second one did look...
Brad Guzan is called for a penalty, but he, like, very clearly got his hands on the ball.
Yeah, wins all ball, and I believe it's... I forget what player runs through him, but doesn't happen. But New York Red Bulls, okay, we talk about them being the BWP machine, but without him, sometimes, not scoring the goals, you need other players to step up, and Tim Parker has a lovely little finish and a ball that's probably going in anyway, but he decides to make certain of it. I just think that New York does have that little bit of postseason something extra.
Yeah.
That Atlanta, you know, they've smashed teams and they've pulverized them all over the map. And then they've gotten to certain teams where they just really can't seem to figure them out. And they switch off and this happens. I think this is an excellent example of coaching as well, of having your tactics right, knowing how to deal with a team like Atlanta. So I agree. The calls, I think, sort of are the dark cloud over this one that maybe makes it so it doesn't tell us all that much about it. But I think New York Red Bulls looked the better team, and I think if they did meet each other, I would be putting my money on the Red Bulls as well. As crazy as that might sound against a team that has such amazing attacking prowess.
It really does. You know, you really look to see if Bradley Wright Phillips is going to be in there. Some of the other things that happened there was like after the disallowed penalty, Tim Parker scores while obviously offside, and that gets disallowed. I do think that the Atlanta's handball penalty is pretty harsh because the Atlanta defender has his arm pretty tucked in. There's not really a way that he could have avoided that situation. But Royer got that one. That's my thought anyway. Maybe I saw the replay wrong. Parker's goal.
Talk about Parker. Let's talk about Timmy.
Tim Parker runs onto this great ball to score his second goal. But the guy, I'm trying to remember who passes it to him. In the middle of his action.
Mule.
So clearly kicks Brad Guzan in the head that Brad Guzan has a chunk of, like a clod of turf from his cleats on his forehead as he's looking at the referee saying, "How do you not?"
I think it's one of those things that sometimes is like, it's an unpleasant job of the goalkeeper to put your body on the line, but Parker has every right to go for that ball.
Yeah, I just wonder whether or not it's a foul on Mule that might call the play.
Oh, I see.
Before it happens. Yeah,
but right. Because Mule's going to ground and basically plays it off the ground.
Yeah, between that and the Raimondo getting kneed in the head, like we haven't. World soccer hasn't had a lot of prominent goalkeeper concussions recently, but sometimes I wonder if the rugby helmets are the way to go because those were two very dangerous plays.
Yeah.
And then Atlanta has one more handball to finally
put things to bed.
That's right. Kaku doesn't score that one.
No. Penalty missed so late. It was interesting that Kaku took that one, considering the way that Daniel Royer took that first penalty, which is... I wish I could kick a ball like that from any part of the pitch because he just smashes that like his life depends on it. Just It's like, mate, it's just got to go in the net. You don't need to break the ball. And then Kaku just kind of tries to soft foot it and really horrendously misses that one. Guzan was always going to get there.
You got to feel like, I wonder if it's a little bit of spreading the experience around, getting people time on the ball. I don't know if, because I think Bradley Wright Phillips is the usual taker. Seattle doused Colorado 4-0.
Yeah,
they in that first goal, I have written inability for them to respond is crazy. There's no clearance of the ball. There's no coverage on Rui Diaz. It's just they're letting people move around them.
Yeah. I mean, I know at this point Colorado, well, it was a few games ago that Colorado was eliminated. But it's just such a lack of effort. This is a team where I just go, they need to clean house completely. I don't know how Tim Howard does it. He must grind his teeth to a pulp at night, thinking about the lack of effort from his team. It's just so unbelievably bad. You know, at this point, it's like, guys, play for pride. But there was no effort at all in any point of the match for them. Of course, it's not a surprising result, and it's great for Seattle, who's running into the playoffs with a ton of momentum behind them. But Colorado handed this one to them, and I feel for their fans because that was such a shocking display from their team. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about this match other than just Colorado stood and watched their team lose.
Maybe the penalty on the second goal was a little divey from Ladero, but it wouldn't have even counted anyway.
I agree. I think, and you can say, okay, that turned the tide of the match. I didn't feel like it was a penalty, but the referee is standing right there watching it. It looks like there's a very soft hand into Lodero's back, and he just sells it well. But there was no response from Colorado after the first goal, so the fact that there was no response after the penalty or after the third or after the fourth is not surprising.
Portland has this 0-0 draw against Dallas, which is kind of damp gunpowder from Dallas, who's had... It's kind of like in the whole first period, Portland had all this movement but couldn't get any sort of finish or chance together. And Dallas had chances, but they couldn't find the target. Portland got better, but they couldn't put anything together. And hilariously, I love this. Somehow, you know, if they've got to have a nil-nil draw at home, they still lose something as Liam Ridgewell is sent off for a kick to the ass.
Oh, how did I miss that part?
He's going up for a header. I actually put in my notes, check this. I watched the highlights. I watched all the other highlights. I went back just to make sure. He's coming up for a header, and I guess he's turning or whatever. His foot kicks the Dallas player right in the ass, and that earns him a 94th minute ticket to the locker room.
You can't do that?
You can't.
No. And it's kind of funny, too, for, again, two teams that have had pretty okay seasons that just are sputtering out of control. I don't think this is too shocking of a result. It's crazy to me that Dallas is still in first place.
This is true. And this was their clinch. This is their playoff qualification game.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, it's just... It's shocking. Out of the six teams currently in the playoffs in the West, in terms of form, the only teams that have been playing well is Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake. Or sorry, the Sounders as well, I guess.
Yes.
I would say maybe the Sounders even more than Sporting Kansas City. So yeah, who knows? But it's crazy to see teams throwing away points at this stretch. I don't know if they're just feeling comfortable with where they are, if Dallas just feels like, well, whatever, we don't care where we end up. We're probably going to stay in the playoffs, but what a snoozer.
And I think that it's crazy how good that the Western Conference has been with how little dominance you have in the teams that are up top. But if you look at, I feel like the team that I feel for the most in my team of the week is Houston Dynamo, who go down 2-0 and come back to win 3-2 against the Earthquakes. They won an emphatic victory against Philadelphia to win the U.S. Open Cup in midweek. And the hits just keep coming for Mauro Manotas, who became the first ever who set the season record for the Dynamo for regular season goals at 15.
Jesus, 15?
Yeah, this was a wonderful, wonderful. I think that's in a single season, but I could be wrong. That is a wonderful result for them. This kind of thing is what makes fans for life, and it's unfortunate for San Jose that they could build up that sort of advantage against a team that is a pretty, you know, a conference rival and somebody that you've seen. Right, it's the Earthquakes in Houston. There's a deep seated, the Houston were the Earthquakes before they got moved. That is a deep seated rivalry, and they go up 2-0, and they can't hold on to it.
Yeah. Which, again, don't think is terribly surprising, but mm-hmm. Houston just continues to somehow find a way, and just so, again, disappointing that it's happening so late in the season, because you have to imagine that if they just showed this kind of grit a little earlier on, even with two more lucky wins, you know, they could actually be making a late playoff run right now instead of, you know, clawing behind Vancouver and Minnesota kind of hopelessly.
I felt so good for them after this. It's unfortunate. It was crazy to me that a team that's this good is so far down in the standings.
Yeah. When they're good, it's crazy that a team this good is so far down on the standings, but I agree. Well done to them. Well deserved. Looking ahead, we're down to the business end of things, and I think we've sort of talked a little bit about the lineups for things that are going to happen. There'll likely be some interesting matches next week. And at least in the West, we will continue to just watch that table go up and down.
In the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter, That's So MLS. You can also find me on Instagram, also at That's So MLS. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine. WhatAHowler.com, issue 15, is coming at you soon. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com on iTunes and wherever great podcasts are found. So please do that.
All right. And until next week, don't kick a player in the butt.